There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're talking architecture and design now. Pleasure to have in the studio the design director and head of architecture at Atkins Middle East, Lee Morris. Morning, Lee. Thanks for joining us. We're talking Saudi Arabia because you've just put out an interesting report that says the following. Saudi Arabia has an opportunity to rewrite the rule book. With Vision 2030, you say that it is fundamentally helping to change the design of buildings in the kingdom. And Saudi Arabia has a great opportunity to do just that. Why is this such a game changer for architecture in Saudi Arabia?
Well, let me start with Vision 2030. This is an awe-inspiring and aspirational vision for a country. Vision 2030 was officially launched last November at the Future Initiative Investment Conference by the newly anointed Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS as he's known. This guy is only 32 years old, and he's leading a country of 30 million people in a completely new direction. His message at the conference was pretty clear. He said 3 decades the state has worked assiduously to avoid offending the conservative elite and stalling progress and modernity. And he was putting a full stop at that point. In the conference, and I'll talk about architecture, of course, but in this conference, interestingly, and anybody who knows Saudi will be amazed by this, there was mixed coffee breaks, women did not have to wear the abaya, and there were no intermissions for prayers. And that sounds pretty normal to most people, but not in Saudi Arabia. So MBS, the Crown Prince, was signalling a whole new change and direction for the country. Vision 2030 has three clear themes. It's a vibrant society, a thriving economy, an ambitious nation. So in terms of Vision 2030, it's a diversification away from the use of oil and the need for revenue from oil. It's a social, economic, and government reform, inward investment, boosting tourism, gender equality, environmental and technological innovation, religious moderation. Now, that feeds in to the built environment. So in terms of architecture, this is immense, because a lot of the projects that he's launching obviously affects master planning and architecture.
So if we take those in turn, master planning and architecture, because they're two related issues, aren't they? Let's look at master planning first of all, both in terms of new developments, like the giant neon mega city that he's planning up in part of the country, or in an existing city like Riyadh or Jeddah. How will master planning change in the new Saudi Arabia?
Well, master planning is, in terms of new development, the first element that's taken on board. Basically, architecture then follows. So, for example, you just mentioned neon. NEOM is a project in the northwest corner of Saudi, near the Jordanian border. This is 10,000 square miles as a master plan, with about $500 million investment. This is 10 times the size of Luxembourg. Now, what this will be is a high-tech hub. This is the new city, the most safest, most futuristic city that he sees as the clear marker of where this country needs to go. It will be linked to artificial intelligence. So basically, this will be the high-tech city of the future. This is how we look into the future in 10 to 20 years' time. But most importantly, at the base of that is social life and gender norms, which are based on global best practices. So this means he's trying to bring Saudi Arabia into the 21st century. And NEOM is that benchmark for to do that.
So how will that be different? How will the master planning of that be different from, say, the, I don't know, King Abdullah Aziz city or MR, the economic city, some of the other new cities that Saudi Arabia has built over the past 10, 15 years?
Well, King Abdullah Financial District, which is north of Riyadh, is lying dormant. It's 3 million square meters of offices that were started in one phase about 8 years ago. And it's a very eerie place because nothing has been taken up. It's incredibly eerie. It's this Disneyland of architecture, an amazing architecture, which has not taken tenancy at all. So they had a business plan that didn't work. But what they're trying to do now is be very sustainable, put a business case together, and employ international consultants from around the world with best practice to make master plans work, using the best principles of what happens in the West in terms of how communities live, in terms of how developments are put together, and then apply those to Saudi Arabia.
all sounds very nice, really. But I mean, I've been to the cities in Saudi Arabia, not very recently, I have to admit, not within the last 10 years. But traditionally, Saudi has sort of lagged other Gulf countries in sort of investing into nice buildings. You look at pictures of Riyadh, for instance, you've got the Kingdom Holding Tower, one or two other big skyscrapers that look pretty flashy, but not much else. Jeddah, one or two buildings, again, not much else. It sort of really sort of lags the rest of the Gulf. And when I look at things like NEOM, this new city, $500 billion, huge amount of money, I'm wondering whether or not I'm guessing that it's much more expensive to build a building like the Kingdom Holding Building in Riyadh than a standard building. Yes. That whether or not, for something out of the public eye, like NEOM, whether or not they're going to spend a lot on architecture.
They'll spend a lot on architecture, but architecture is only one part of master planning. Obviously, the built environment includes all of the spaces around architecture, around the buildings themselves. So community facilities, parks facilities, you know, how people move around the city is very important. You're absolutely right. They have stalled, but that's and MBS and the Crown Prince have identified that. He's a massive driver for change. He wants to move away from the old establishment of what Saudi is, to move it into the 21st century. And that means that, yes, there will be shiny buildings, but also the fundamental of the infrastructure in terms of building hospitals, building schools, and building housing programs is also fundamental to what he wants to do.
I know that sort of tall buildings have been called vainglorious, and we've got the sort of tall mile-high tower coming up in Jeddah. Is there a sort of move globally away from these sort of what might be seen as sort of vanity projects, these very, very tall buildings, to sort of more practical buildings?
Without question. I mean, you mentioned Kingdom Tower in Jeddah. That project has stalled. That's a building that's taller, that was meant to be taller than the Burj Khalifa, at about 1,000 meters. That has been stalled for the last 2 years.
Is that lack of money or what?
It's lack of money, and it's also the fact that the change in the climate, change in the government climate, in terms of there was an era then, and now there's a new era coming in. So you're right, it's absolutely important that there still will be the shiny, big, bright buildings that get built. But I think now, in terms of a mature and sustainable environment, and Dubai is coming into that role now, actually, is that the shiny buildings will still go on. But the fundamentals is we build sustainable, appropriate infrastructure for the country.
Let's talk about those big changes in society. Somebody wrote in saying, no name on this, keep your arguments to architecture rather than abayas and prayer breaks in Saudi Arabia. And I kind of know what they're getting at for us as Western expatriates talking about these huge changes in Saudi Arabia. What do we know about that? And yet, when you're an architect, you cannot ignore society and culture there. Wherever you are, whether it's London or New York or Riyadh, you have to reflect the society and culture. How do you approach that?
There's no question. I mean, we're involved in King Abdulaziz Road, which is the religious tourist city in Mecca. That's where the collision of the 21st century architectural approach and the tradition of the Ajiri architecture meets very, very head on. So this is the city that... It's 5.5 million square meters in terms of development. It's absolutely huge and is the center of religious tourism in Saudi and the world. So it is important that we understand the traditions, we understand the communities, we understand how the country ticks and how the people respond to architecture. So it's very much we can't design in a bubble. We have to respond to the cultural elements of the project and the people.
And these cultural elements are changing so fast.
They are.
So we hear this morning, Saudi Arabia's director of public security is to hire female soldiers for the very first time. Applicants have got till this Thursday to put their names into the hat for that. So obviously that means a different sort of barracks, a different sort of way of working for the army. And that's going to be the same right across Saudi Arabia as women start to drive, get more into the workplace. So I think this is a very valid argument. It is not a religious. No. Or a cultural argument.
One question comes in: how is Atkins moving Saudi Arabia towards a low carbon economy with things like electric vehicles, low carbon in so many different ways? How are you doing that?
Well, I think we talked about NEOM. NEOM's fundamental is the low carbon society. This is talking about driverless cars, drones, replacing sort of humans in certain respects with artificial intelligence, making the city more efficient, making it a smart city. But again, from my point of view, yes, going back to the idea of building these tall, wonderful looking buildings, but for me, we have to design appropriately in the country. The climate is extremely challenging. So to build passive passive design, orientation of buildings, protecting these buildings from the sun is absolutely important. So we always, as far as Atkins is concerned, we try to build environmentally friendly buildings as the first principles, and then the technology will follow that. So that's where we start from.
I just want to ask a quick question before we go about the sort of the tourism influx around the west coast of Saudi Arabia, south of Neom. Yes. Richard Branson's pledged to get involved, but they want to have something like 200 kilometres of resorts up and down the west coast there. Do you see that being sort of replicating the sort of architecture that we have here, the sort of major international hotel chain? So what do you know about that side of it?
Well, without question, the Red Sea Resort Islands, there's 50 islands on the Red Sea, which are pristine islands. So they're looking that to be the new Maldives.
Maldives rather than New Dubai, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, people have learnt a lot from Dubai, because Dubai obviously was the forerunner of most of the development in the last 20 years. So,
Lee, fascinating discussion. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Mahmoud writes in saying, your guest sounds like a younger Malcolm, which I think is...
And better looking as well.
Well, younger, better looking. Yeah, exactly. The minute we get half-decent intelligence, that's me out.
Lee has never met Malcolm before, but he has. Just before we let you go, Lee, your trip down memory lane, because you have met Brandy Scott before. Brandy, tell us when you met Lee.
Lee and I met in New York when he was designing, or had designed, a tower for one Donald Trump.
This was the Trump Tower that was going to be on Palm Jumeirah.
Correct, yes. In the centre of Palm Jumeirah, yeah.
Never got built, though.
Never got built.
Not because the design wasn't any good, though. I'm sure it was fabulous.
It was absolutely awesome, by the way.
Had it been built, it would have won many awards.
It was, unfortunately, we met sort of early 2008. You can probably do the maths on that.
Yes. Wrong time, wrong place.
Great talking to you, Lee Morris, Head of Architecture for Atkins in the Middle East. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.